This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions, plural, .org. Thank you so much for joining us, and now, enjoy the podcast. Hello, and welcome. We are here today with Chana. Chana, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, it's a great pleasure and an honor to be with you. And as in all of these calls, I'd like to begin by asking you to just describe in your own way what you're looking at and what you hope to get out of our call today. And you can ramble for a few moments. You don't have to worry about making it all sound just so. And then I will ask you a number of questions that will help us land exactly where we need to.
Okay. I think my most basic fear is of survival. I have this kind of view of a catastrophic world, much worse than the Great Depression. But kind of leading into that is the fear that I'm not capable of really taking care of myself, and that I can't, and that not being capable kind of relates to feeling like I can't do a really good enough job to keep a good job or do a good job, and that I can't deal with error in important things. I get really embarrassed and ashamed about mistakes, and I guess I'm basically feeling that if I'm not worthy if I don't do an almost perfect job. Now, despite this, I've managed in the past to have decent jobs, but I work way overtime to be perfect at them. And at the moment, I've been looking for another job, a new job, after not working for a while. And I'm terrified that I won't be able to do most of anything. My training is in a couple of areas where I know I can't get that kind of work here. And since I don't have experience in other areas, I'm looking at pretty low-level jobs in general, or if I try to kind of broaden what I'm looking at, I get very anxious that I'm not going to be able to do a good enough job unless I've just got incredible experience and training. So I guess the major areas are feeling that I'm not capable and being afraid that I won't do a good job and then I'll be embarrassed if I make mistakes, do badly. So that's my rambling summary.
No, I think you did a great job. Actually, very coherent. And there's one part of it.
See, I was afraid I didn't do a good job with the summary.
There you go. The issue is right there in your judgment. But I want to check with you because you started out by talking about a survival fear and then went on from there. And it sounds like there's a connection, as in if I don't do a perfect job, that in addition to, you know, the embarrassment that I may feel, it may actually put me in a place where I'm not able to survive.
Yeah, I'll be a bag lady or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so it sounds like you've got a wire set up in your belief system that says that anything less than perfection equals annihilation. Does that sound right? Even though I put it away, you might not have put it.
Yeah, maybe a little extreme, but I guess it probably does come down to that.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to make it more kind of bold just to kind of get to the heart of it. The first thing I want to say is that, you know, there's a part of our brain, sometimes referred to as the primitive mind, sometimes people call it the lizard brain, which is really all about determining in any moment, am I safe or am I in danger? And that's the only two settings that it knows, safe or danger. And it is something that, you know, is really crucial for our survival. It needs to function all the time, and it needs to function in partnership with the other parts of our brain. But where we get stuck is that it can, over time, interpret our reality in such a way that it's seeing danger and seeing real threats to survival where they don't actually exist. And in that case, it kind of goes into overdrive and puts us in a consistent, you know, hypervigilant state of stress. And so what I hear you describing is that.
Yes.
That there's this ever-present fear of survival, which motivates you to, you know, be a perfectionist in a way that doesn't really feel that good to you and probably doesn't even really ultimately make you any more perfect, you know, than you would have been otherwise. But what it does do is make you very uncomfortable and unhappy.
Yeah, I think it makes things harder because I'm so tense I can't even think well at times.
Exactly. Because what happens when that part of your brain is activated is that you go into either fight or flight or freeze, and or sometimes you go into a heightened state of anxiety, which is the fourth F that I refer to sometimes as freak. And, you know, sometimes it's all of those or a combination of those or one of those, but none of them are particularly comfortable, and they're not designed to last in you for a significant period of time. They're designed to help you deal with a saber-toothed tiger, you know, if you were way back there when that part of the brain was really the most dominant and the other more sophisticated parts hadn't developed yet. So that's just the background. And with that background, then we need to turn back to your specific situation and ask you, when do you remember a situation arising in your early life that actually wasn't safe for you? And I don't mean safe in terms of, you know, violence or, you know, actual survival threats, but where in your childhood was life the most challenging, and was the environment and the people around the most challenging for you?
Well, the first one I remember is when I was about four, and my mother was going to have my sister at a hospital in another city because of problems with the pregnancy, and so my father hired a woman to look after me, and the whole family went there, and he would spend every day at the hospital with my mother. And this woman was pretty mean to me, and I would tell my father, but he wouldn't believe me. And I don't know how long that lasted till finally, I guess he came back and hurt her and fired her. But that's the earliest memory.
Okay. So let's go on from there. What about – that was a traumatic but temporary experience. Was there anything in your family relationships ongoingly that was to your memory and to your knowledge that was very stressful for you?
Well, I remember my mom used to threaten to take me to an orphanage, and she would point out a building to me that she said was the orphanage, and I believe, you know, if I wasn't good, and there were times I wasn't good. And it was only when I reached about age eight that I realized that that she wouldn't do that because it would affect her sort of social status. So I felt a little bit more secure at that point.
So Okay, I want to reflect that back to you to make sure I understand it and I understand the dimensions of it. Your mom would tell you kind of like a refrain. She would say, if you're not good, I'm going to send you to that orphanage. See that building over there? That's where, you know, the bad kids go.
Right. If I, you know, if I was not doing something right,
mm-hmm. And that
was a threat.
And was it always clear to you what that something right was?
Sometimes, yes, but sometimes it was like I should have known to do something. It's not that she, you know, I should have offered to help with something. So sometimes I didn't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's just pause here, Hannah, and go back to what I was saying about the primitive brain. So in the early years, prior to you, you know, kind of getting wise to the situation when you were about 8, in the years where your mind was really a sponge absorbing the outside world and trying to adjust to the outside world, but especially impressionable, your mother, you know, doing the best she could, right, because that's what parents do, even if they're not skilled or if they're very wounded themselves, your mother created an ongoing threat, which was that if you weren't perfect, then she was going to give you away. And if she gave you away, she'd put you in that building where the bad children go or where the children go who are abandoned in life. So that orphanage, to your young, impressionable mind, really meant annihilation, right? It would have been the end of everything that you know in your life. Does that sound right?
I don't know about annihilation exactly, but, yeah, it just, I envisioned it as just this vast, empty place where I would have nothing, yeah.
Right, and so I may be overstating the case, but the reason that I'm overstating it is because at 4 or 5 years old, everything looms so much larger, you know, than it does when we have an adult perspective. So whether it's one word or another, as you said, it's this vast empty place where you are alone and your bonds that connected you to the caregivers who were watching over you, it, you know, would be gone. That was the threat.
Yeah.
They won't be there for you anymore.
Right.
Right. And so to a young, really dependent being, you know, that's the same as, you know, my whole world will come crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear me talk about it and when we're using these stark terms to talk about it, what do you notice you feel in your body?
In my throat, sort of tightness and pain, and forehead and behind my eyes, sort of, a pressure.
So that's a very good description. And before we go on, I just want to ask you if for a few moments you would keep your attention on your throat and on the sensations behind your eyes and let your intention just be to allow them to be there as they are and to just continue to be aware of them, you know, connected to them through your awareness. So the idea isn't to understand them or to change them or to make them go away, but the idea is just to stay present to and aware of and connected to these sensations and kind of watch them with some openness and curiosity as they move and shift and change in whatever way that they will. So I know that was a lot of words, and I'm going to be silent for a moment to just give you an opportunity to do that without, you know, so much interruption. But just a quick, you know, review, the idea is that in the silence, you're just going to watch those sensations or whatever sensations arise in connection to this topic of if I'm not good, I'm sent away, I'll be abandoned, and sometimes I don't even know what it is I'm supposed to do in order to be good enough. So there's not just a fear, but there's also confusion. And if I don't figure out what it is I'm supposed to do on my own, I still may be abandoned in this very cold way. But just turn your attention to your body. And you don't even have to report to me, but just notice the sensations and emotions that move within you. Stay connected a little bit longer. You can even breathe into those areas to see if, as you do, you get more clarity and things are freer to present themselves to you and to move. Just stay with those sensations for a few moments more. Good. So just use a few words to tell me what you noticed.
Well, the physical feelings are pretty much still there, but I'm also feeling grief and not feeling loved.
Mm-hmm. And where do you feel that grief? Where is that centered in your body? I'm not loved.
I think in my chest and also my throat. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell what's what.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And you don't really have to even distinguish between the two.
Yeah, there's a lump in my throat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just want to reiterate for you that whether or not your mother loved you is a question that I'm not in a position to answer. But even if she did love you and love you in the best way that she knew how, she set up this wiring that I was describing before for you, where you felt the opposite of acceptance. You didn't feel inside of yourself that you were valuable and worthy and loved just because you existed, just because you were her daughter. But instead, the only way you could receive love and approval as it felt inside of you was to meet an impossible standard. Impossible because a lot of times you didn't even know what it was. And yet still the threat of abandonment remained. As a visceral fear for a young child, it wasn't... you know, if you don't obey, you're going to have a time out. You're going to lose a privilege. It was, if you don't obey, you're going to be sent away. So that survival response that we spoke about earlier was really, it was necessary as you, the very young you saw it, to be ever vigilant. You had to go into a state of high alert because it wasn't just nurturing that you weren't going to get. It wasn't that mother would take away her love. You know, that in some ways would have been hard, but much harder was she would just remove you completely.
Yeah.
And so as you hear that and you feel into that tightness in your throat and the other sensations that you're experiencing now, can you see how it's how it makes complete sense?
Oh yeah.
That you would have this set up inside of you.
Yes.
And you know, we don't have to go through, you know, the rest of your biography, but I'm sure if we did, you could tell me at different parts of your life, different key episodes and experiences, that this setup really came into play. And not only was it painful for you, but it, as we said earlier, it would keep getting in the way of you excelling, you know, in whatever the arena was. It didn't have to be just at work. It could be even in relationships and all kinds of things. But am I right just to sort of put it out there in a general sense and say it's always been with you and it's always been painful and instructing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the way you explained it makes total sense.
Okay. So what I want to share with you now is the good part. And even though it's challenging, it's really helpful to know that there's something very specific that you can do. And the way that you heal yourself and change this dynamic, you know, literally rewire your brain, is to give yourself the kind of caring and soothing and really unconditionally loving presence and awareness that you didn't get. And it's actually very simple how to do that. And you've already begun in this phone call, because those parts of you that feel unworthy, that arise, you know, when you're at a job and you feel like you have to stay long hours to do it perfectly, those parts of you are the most wounded parts. Those are the legacy of that early trauma that you experienced. And they're also not all of you. In other words, there's a part of you that has the wisdom and awareness even, you know, to be in touch with me and say, I'd like to do this phone call. So does that resonate with you, the idea that it's in you, but it's not all of you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I think I've also realized that I feel a lot like my mother towards myself, and that I'm angry at myself for not doing a good job, not feeling competent.
Right. So that's an important addition, that it's not even just that, you know, there's a fear of survival or being imperfect, but when you're not perfect according to this impossible standard, also there are parts of you that are angry and disapproving.
Yes.
Right. But those parts aren't all of you either, because, and this is the key point I wanted to bring your attention to, you always have the ability to witness and be aware of these belief patterns and emotions that arise within you. So before we go on, I just want to, you know, just check in with you and make sure that that seems clear, that that you have a function within you that we can call the witness, that when you're not subsumed by, you know, a fear of abandonment, for instance. In other words, when you're not completely lost within it, there's a part of you that's capable of seeing it as it arises within you. And if you're not sure about that, you can just go back to even the practice that we did a couple moments ago, where you could notice the sensations and you could watch them shift and change, and then you could report them to me. So are you on board fully with the idea that, yes, I have the ability to witness all of this?
But as you said, you know, there are points when you're subsumed or feel overwhelmed by the emotions. I think that's
right. That's true, too. So it's a good clarification you're making. I'm not asking you to say, oh, 24/7 I have the capability to stay connected to my witnessing function, just to recognize that I have it. And that at many times it can work for me. I can do it. I can draw it into play. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, from this point forward, also, you can decide that anything that feels bad to you, so whether it's a survival concern, a worthiness concern, a perfection concern, or an anger or disapproval at yourself, all of those things, we could say, those feel bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so whether it's a quality in your mind that just causes you to kind of furrow your brow, whether you actually do that or not, but kind of an inward furrowing, or whether it has a literal physical component where it really causes you to tense up or contract, or both, all of those things I just mentioned that are part of the constellation we're working with, they all feel bad somehow. And you have the opportunity from this moment forward to say, when I feel bad, the first thing I'm going to do is notice. Just literally say, wow, there that is again. And you don't even have to understand it. You don't have to get to the bottom of it. You don't have to release it. Just allow your witnessing function to be present. Look at that. There it is again. And sometimes you'll succeed immediately, and sometimes you'll get on the train of, you know, disapproval or anger or unworthiness, and you'll go for a while and you'll be subsumed. But somewhere along the line, you'll have the ability to notice. And it's your very noticing itself that takes you right off the train. Now, that's only going to be something that you'll be confident about with practice. But in this moment, at least, does it make sense to you that once you notice something, you're not subsumed by it anymore?
Well, I mean, in the past, I've noticed things like, you know, I'm getting totally anxious about something that, you know, this is the same kind of thing, but it hasn't derailed me. It just keeps on going anyway. I mean, in part, it's kind of a paradox that I don't feel capable, so I can't even do that.
Right, so let me just make sure I understand it, that in the past you have noticed, here it is again.
Yes.
It has felt like you are, you know, helpless to stop it, that your noticing in those situations didn't really take you off the train, you just kept going.
Right. I mean, I would tell myself that, you know, this was just the way I habitually view things, and it wasn't necessarily so, but it just would keep on going.
Right. Okay. So remember, it's very important that I said the first thing you do is notice. But that's not the only thing. And if you just notice, it is possible that the train could keep on going, or you could notice momentarily, but the momentum of the train is such that, you know, it's as if the conductor grabs out and pulls you back onto the train, and that moment when you are on the station platform just seems like a distant memory because there you are, just, you know, right back in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to talk about is what happens after the noticing. And what I want to share with you is that what heals on a fundamental level is a kind of attention. And it's best described, I think, especially because we're talking about mother and mother love and these kinds of really visceral issues. It's best described by the word cradling. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what I mean. Cradling means, well, when you think of a very inconsolable infant, there's a natural way, hopefully, that most parents know how to be with that child. They don't, as they're holding the child, press, you know, so tightly against it and hold them so close that the child feels pressure. And they don't, on the other hand, hold the child so far away that the child feels abandoned. There's a place that I would call just so, where the baby is cradled, close but not too close, and it knows two things. First of all, it knows that you're there, and in a loving way that you're there. But it also knows that it has all the space that it needs to resolve in its own way and time. So when we cradle with our awareness or our witnessing function, we don't even need words. But if there were words to describe what I'm talking about, they would be something like this. As you're noticing your physical sensations and the emotions that are a part of that, it's as if you would just be saying, okay, all right, I'm here, I'm with you, I love you, I always will. However you are, however you show up, you're good. I'm here being with you. I'm loving you. I'm not going anywhere. That's the quality of attention that I'm describing. Is that clear to you what I mean?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
The feeling that comes up when you say that is kind of an automatic, but I don't deserve that kind of.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the crux of the matter, and it's the reason why it's so great that you got on this call today, because the parts of you that need that are exactly the parts of you that don't think they deserve that. So your yeah, but, you know, as I describe it, and you kind of beat me to the punch. You said the first thing that comes up is the but, and so we're seeing it the same way. Is that as soon as you even contemplate giving yourself that kind of loving energy and attention, the parts of you that don't even know what that is and wouldn't even think that they should have it if they could, those are the ones that are going to rise up. The parts of you that feel worthless, the parts of that you feel that, you know, you'll never be good enough. Even if you were perfect, that still wouldn't be good enough. The part of you that is angry at yourself that you described. These parts are going to just come flashing to the surface. And then those are the parts and those are the moments that need this attention. So in other words, if you were cradling the undeserving aspect of you, you're not going to try to convince it with logic. Oh, of course you're deserving. And, you know, the only reason you feel that way is because of your early programming. And it's not a part of you that needs or responds to a debate or, you know, some kind of belief surgery.
Mm-hmm.
It actually only will respond to the very cradling itself. So what that would look like is, yeah, and I'm just using words, but it's really a quality of awareness that you're going to practice in a moment. It's really, yeah, I get it. I know that you feel undeserving. I know that it's uncomfortable for you even to have me here providing this loving space and attention for you. It's okay. You can feel as undeserving as you need to. You can completely give yourself over to that feeling. I'm not going to try to change you. I'm just going to be here with you as you are. You don't have to be any different than you are right now in thought or in feeling or sensation. I'm just going to stay right here with you. I'm going to accompany you moment by moment through your experience. And I'm just going to be here paying attention. Is that pretty clear?
Yeah.
So, as I say that, go ahead.
It's like, can I do more than one at a time? Well, you know, they're all there.
Well, there's only, first of all, you only have to do what I'm describing one moment at a time. And you only have to do it with what is arising in that moment. And actually, when you get really specific with your noticing, it isn't really that there's a ton of things that start vying for your attention. Because in any moment, there's usually one thing that is rising above the rest of the noise and saying, here it is, my turn, be with me. And that's the only one you have to be with. And as you be with that, you know, and it gets what it needs, yes, something else may arise, but you only have to place your attention in one place at any given moment.
And am I paying attention to the, like, the feeling, the tightness in my throat, or am I paying attention to the sort of general feeling of afraid that I'm not going to be able to do it?
Okay, so this is a very good question. Sometimes when we begin this process, we hope that we're going to just be able to place our attention on whatever is arising. That could be, you know, the tightness in your throat, as you say, or it could even be just a stream of thoughts that are coming through that are very painful. But then we notice that we have a fear of being able to do it, or we are resistant to doing it, and we can't bypass that resistance or push it away just because we want to. So if you notice that you're tensing up in any way, that's the first place that you put your attention. So, oh, look what's happening right now. I'm tensing up. I'm wondering if I can do it. And then you just allow that uncertainty or insecurity or resistance to be there, and you just stay connected to that until it recedes and the next thing comes.
Okay.
So there's something I didn't tell you before, but it's more under the good news category, and that is that any kind of contraction, and by contraction I mean any block to feeling directly and witnessing directly what's happening within you, any block dissolves as long as you just pay attention to it in the way I was describing. I've never known one that doesn't in all the people I've worked with. Sometimes it takes a few seconds, sometimes it takes a minute, but only your attention is required, and soon enough that resistance will just dissipate and bring you in touch with the direct experience that you next need to witness. So let's just practice a little bit. Just turn your attention to your body right now in this moment. And what calls your attention?
It's sort of a subtle kind of buzzy feeling in my head, I think, more than anything. My throat's still a little tight, but just...
But the buzzy feeling is there and kind of prominent. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't say prominent. It's sort of a subtle kind of buzzy feeling, but that's what calls my attention most. I think what it is a feeling like I want to escape.
Okay. So that's perfect that you noticed it, even though it was subtle. And it may or may not be about escape, and it sounds like you got some good information about that, but we'll put the meaning of it aside just for a few moments and see if you can just, I'm going to use a different metaphor now, see if you can surf right along with the buzzy sensation. In other words, you're so close to it that you're following it just like you would if you were a surfer on a board. You're following the wave, you know, moment by moment. So just for a few moments, just stay right on top of the wave of that buzzy sensation and see where it takes you. Keep surfing. The wave changes, it becomes something else. That's completely fine. Fine if it stays the same. What are you noticing?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that my attention became kind of harsh. And I had to kind of go back and say, whoa, you know, be kind.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I'm just noticing it sort of going further down.
Into your body, you mean?
Yeah, into my neck and chest.
Okay, so first of all, it's great that you noticed that you had a harsh quality to your attention because, you know, if you're stiff on the surfboard, you're going to crash. And going back to our other metaphor, if you're cradling with some kind of insistence,
mm-hmm.
you know, then the baby's just going to scream louder. So when you notice that you're harsh, rather than judging yourself for being harsh, oh, there I go again, I can't even do this. Just exactly as you did, notice, oh, there's some harshness. I'll let that be there, and then I'll return to my attention, my intention of being, you know, gentle and spacious with my awareness. So see if you can spend a few moments more with that buzzing as it moved down into your neck and shoulders, and just stay connected to it. surfing gently, attentively, and your only mission is just to travel with it wherever it goes and just notice what's there as you move with it. Take a few more moments to do that. What are you noticing now? So share just a few words about what you're experiencing.
As it traveled down, it seemed to sort of like circle around my heart, where it felt more like grief, and then it kind of went back up into my neck, throat. But it seems to be less intense.
And is it, you said it circled back, is it more in your throat at this moment?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're doing a really beautiful job, and I would like you to just continue for a few more moments with the recognition that it's a little bit less intense, and just surf with it some more. And if it becomes a gentler wave, fine. If it, you know, comes back and becomes a tidal wave, that's okay too. All you need to do is just keep watching in this gentle way, you know, as if your attention is just saying, it's okay, okay, I'm with you, I'm not going anywhere. And just see what happens for a few more moments. You stay right with it. You can breathe right into the area of the strongest sensation to make sure that there's enough space there. There's a loving quality to your attention. You want to notice every detail because you care about every detail. So share a few more words about what's happening now.
I realized I felt like crying, and then my next immediate thought was, I don't want to cry. So it took me a second to sort of accept that one. And then I felt less like crying. And I guess sensations are mainly in my throat still. I'm feeling very tired.
Sometimes when we pay attention to what we're really feeling after being in a hypervigilant state for so long, we recognize how exhausting it is. We don't even know that we were carrying this level of exhaustion with us from having to be so alert all the time and in survival mode. But I want to go back.
There's a part of me that doesn't want to be paying attention to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that too. You know, I want to go back to something that you said before, which was you noticed that you wanted to cry, and then you said, you know, you had the thought, I don't want to cry, and then you had to accept that. Crying, when it comes, can be really important if you stay aware of it and you surf those sensations too. Sometimes we can cry and just create a feedback loop where, you know, we're not really paying attention, we're just checking out, but it's making us feel worse and worse. But if you were surfing with your attention in this gentle way, and tears wanted to come, it's a beautiful thing if you're willing to let them come and just notice how it feels to let them fall, what it feels like inside. Tears create flow if we let them, and flow is exactly what we're looking for, because when you surf with your awareness, you're not trying to change or stop your experience. You're trying to just let your experience be. And all experience is constantly in flow when it's unobstructed. So I want to ask you if you're willing, recognizing the tiredness, allowing that to be here too, recognizing some resistance you might have to whatever comes up, just see if for a few more moments you can continue to locate and then stay connected to these sensations that you're experiencing. You've been doing a great job, and I think a little bit more would be really helpful. And remember, there's no way you can do it wrong. There's no way a part of you can arise that isn't acceptable. Everything that comes, no matter how much unworthiness it might carry, or undeservedness, or anger, or pain, or grief, anything that arises is perfect as it is because it's part of creation. And your job is just to say yes, to allow it. Oh, I see, there you are. I'm right here with you. I'm embracing you. Because just through the very fact of your existence, of your arising, you're precious. And I want to hold you in my consciousness the way I would anything that is precious to me. But just for a few more moments, see if you can do that. Let what arises be precious, even if it's painful. And even if it seems like just resistance is getting in the way. Let that be precious too. Keep going. Just let it take you wherever it does. Stay aware. For a few more moments. So share some words about what you're noticing now.
I'm feeling less exhausted. A little more relaxed. And I still have some tightness in my throat and head. But it feels a little better.
So I'm going to ask you what's maybe going to sound like a funny question, and that is it okay with you to feel a little bit more relaxed?
I'm not sure.
The true answer, and I'm really glad.
I think if I'm more relaxed, maybe something bad will happen if I'm not vigilant.
Right, I understand. So, this hypervigilant survival mode. It's done a good job for you. It's worked really hard.
Yes.
It only knows one way to keep you safe, which is basically to say danger, 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 danger. And, you know, it's precious because all it wanted was for you to survive.
Yeah.
And a long time ago, it was necessary. But it's not necessary in the same way now. And there are other aspects of your consciousness that can be brought into play to help you not just survive, but to thrive as long as you're not in that hypervigilant state. So what's happening in this moment is that you're feeling, first of all, energy where there used to be some exhaustion. And that's really important to notice because a lot of times exhaustion is a kind of resistance. But when you accepted it too, it transmuted into something that was a little more energetic. That's a really big gain to recognize.
Mm.
Wow, I didn't try to change it, but just my awareness brought more energy into the moment. But the next thing is that this state of relaxation is new. And the part of you that doesn't trust yet that it's okay to experience this relaxation shows up and says, hey, wait a minute. This isn't the way we do things. So if you tried to, you know, bulldoze that part of you, it would push back and only shut you down more.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to be able to do is just gently negotiate with it. And what I mean by that is, okay, I hear that you're uncertain that this degree of relaxation is safe, but how about just for the next few minutes? Could we see it? Could we feel it? Is it okay? You can come back in if you need to and shut things down, but for a few minutes, would it be all right?
Mm.
So as I ask that question out loud, what do you notice, you know, inside is the reaction that you're finding? Would it be okay just for a couple minutes to experiment with some relaxation?
I feel wary.
Okay. And if you let that wariness be there, and you even ask this question of it directly, if we just explore the state of openness for a couple minutes, what's the worst thing that could happen?
Might not be able to get it back.
To get which back?
The state of wariness.
Ah, okay. So, you know, what's interesting is that the survival mode fears for its own survival.
Yeah.
Like if I just relax, then I'm not going to be able to use my reflex to tense up when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, let's accept that and let's ask this question. How about could we explore the state of openness just for a few moments and then check back in and see if it's okay to keep going? How does that feel?
That feels better, I guess, because we're going to check back in.
Yeah. So let's do that. Let's spend a few more moments. Just tune in again. Notice what's there. Breathe into the sensations and just surf them gently. If there is more relaxation there, if you can even just sink into it, it's almost as if you're going to not just surf on top of the wave, but you're going to let the wave take you, knowing that in a few moments, you'll be back on shore. We'll check in. Just for these moments, just let yourself be taken and continue to stay aware of the sensation. Good, so what do you notice? Use a few words. Describe this state right now in this very moment.
Well, it's funny. Sort of internally, it does feel more open and relaxed. At the same time, I'm aware of my back and shoulders and upper arms sort of aching. Feeling tense, which I hadn't been aware of before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So new awareness has arisen, which is great. See if you can just for another few moments bring your attention to that muscular tension, spinal tension, and let your awareness be accepting of that too. In other words, you're not trying to relax those tense muscles. If they relax, that's great. If they don't, that's okay too. But just bring the same kind of spacious attention right to them, right to those places where it feels tight. Breathe into them also, letting them have all the space they need to just express what they really feel like. Good. And so just use a few words to describe what it feels like now.
They feel much better, and then I just sort of followed sensations up through my neck to my forehead, behind my eyes, which is where I am right at the moment.
So let's be very responsible and check in with the part of you that's monitoring all of this, the wearing. How's she feeling in this moment?
Kind of just watchful. I think better than before, a little concerned, but not as
so
worried.
She's keeping a watchful eye, but she's not needing to, you know, shut down the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Good. Well, I would like to pause here, Hannah, and just, you know, share with you where we've been and the significance of where we've been. Because in these moments, you have been, you know, in an awesome way, providing exactly what's necessary for you to shift once and for all these resistances that have kept you stuck. Because you began by noticing tension. As you stayed connected to that attention, it began to move. You noticed some resistances and you allowed them, and that gave you further opening. You noticed a part of you that is always vigilant and a little worried about what relaxation feels like and means. And you accepted her too, and you worked with her instead of against her to gain some more moments of direct and gentle witnessing. And the relaxation that you felt inside then brought you to a recognition that you were holding yourself in a tense position structurally. But the same kind of attention, when brought to that area of you, to that structural contraction, also helped it ease and brought you more in a total sense of relaxation, both the flow inside and the structure that was maintaining it. And all along, the part of you that was wary didn't go away, but was allowing this process to continue. And maybe even this wariness had a little curiosity to it, like, what's this all about? Let me check this. Right? This is something new. This is something different. And the essence of what you were experiencing is peace, and a soothing peace that comes from the very acceptance that up until these moments you haven't had the benefit of experiencing. And what you're seeing in this experience is that you can give it to yourself. It's not dependent on any external circumstance or person, and it's not prevented from happening in the present because of what happened in the past. Does all that make sense to you? Did I misrepresent any of it?
No, I think in the past I've always felt like if I had a feeling of peace, I couldn't be with those kinds of unwanted feelings. You know, so it was like, if I wanted to feel good about myself, I had to sort of ignore everything else. And now I feel like I can be with what comes.
Right. It's the opposite. You know, you said it so eloquently just there, that the real peace, the healing, soothing, and sustaining peace, is the one that comes from being with instead of having to push away.
Mm-hmm. I can hardly wait to keep on practicing it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you know, you couldn't have this experience if you, you know, came in and said, well, these feelings are too dangerous or too scary, or they're going to get in the way of my peace, But you also couldn't have this relaxation if you got into an argument with that part of you that's vigilant, like, no, stop being vigilant. This is my time for peace and relaxation. Because then you're just fighting back and you're creating more tension. So allowing the sensations and then even the wary part of you is what created some more openness. And, you know, you said before that you had noticed the pattern, but then you'd get right back on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And I had suggested that it was the noticing first that was necessary, but then what followed was the most important. And what I meant, you now have a direct experience of, which is what follows is this gentle, spacious, loving connection to what's happening within you. That's what means that you're not getting back on the train.
Mm. Okay, I have one more question that's sort of come up.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is kind of a timeout period where I have the luxury of just looking at these emotions sort of apart from any kind of deadline or anything else I have to do. But what if I'm in a crisis situation and I'm totally tense about it?
Well, the first thing we have to be aware of is that you're not just learning a new skill, but you're rewiring your very being. And it's appropriate that you gave yourself a little time away to do that. And this rewiring is kind of like a muscle, you know. You have to work it and keep running energy through that new wiring system in order for it to strengthen and take effect within you. But the more you practice it in controlled circumstances like this, the stronger it becomes. And the more then you're able to take it with you and bring it into play in every situation, whether there's a deadline or a conflict with another person, you know, and that's what you have to look forward to, is the more consistently I practice this and the stronger I become, the more it's a way that I get to meet every experience and I get to have this peacefulness that comes through acceptance along for the ride with me wherever I go.
Mm.
So
okay.
What I would like to do, Hannah, in closing today is I would like to invite you to practice. As you said, you know, you said, I can't wait to practice this, and I was so excited to hear that. I would like to invite you to email me when you feel that you've had enough practice that A, you're getting a lot better at this, and B, you're also seeing where your greatest stumbling blocks are. And then let's do another session like this, and we'll fill in the gaps, and we'll strengthen the places that need a little extra attention so that you can start taking it with you into all those everyday life kinds of situations.
Oh, thank you so much.
Sure, sure. I'd be happy to do that. It's a real honor to be with you. And, you know, I want to close by saying this, that you traveled, you know, thousands of miles in 1 hour. Where you were and how you were describing your life and the difficulty you had in bringing something, you know, really powerful and healing and beneficial to this long-standing suffering, you know, was significant. I mean, it was real. There was, you know, otherwise you wouldn't have been upset about it and you wouldn't have reached out, you know, for this conversation. But as you're here now, you not only have the tools, but you even have the direct experience of how the tools can benefit you. And that's a great testament to you. I mean, I'm very moved by how significant the challenge was, but how fully you met it. And I'm hoping that as you leave this phone call, you'll give yourself some time to notice, wow, I really did travel thousands of miles. This is a fresh experience for me. And that even when those judging voices come in, those yeah buts and those what ifs, that you'll continue to accept them and just let this resonate with you for as long as it just does without, you know, any interference.
Yes, thank you. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, good. So you'll be in touch, and then we'll do this again.
Thank you again so much, Raphael.
All right, you're more than welcome. You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.